Would it help General Motors if it divided up its stock like it was Johnny Walker whiskey, red label or fancier black label? From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. Opponents are squaring up for a showdown at General Motors' annual shareholder meeting today. GM management faces a challenge by hedge fund manager and activist investor David Einhorn of Greenlight Capital. Einhorn thinks GM's stock price should be higher, although profits have been running strong. Einhorn is unhappy. GM shares this morning are almost exactly what they were when the auto giant came out of bankruptcy in 2010. Einhorn is proposing to shareholders some novel financial re-engineering of the company's stock. Here's Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman.
Greenlight's proposal would split GM into two stocks. One would pay regular dividends, the other would capture future earnings growth. The idea is to unlock hidden value in GM's stock. GM CEO Mary Barra acknowledges that GM is undervalued, but she rejects this proposal as a high-risk financial engineering experiment. Barra is under pressure, just like Ford's new CEO, to deal with a downturn in auto sales, along with aggressive competition from tech firms and Tesla in self-driving and electric cars.
Mitchell, thank you. GM stock will open at around $34.36 this morning. Other markets, the FTSE in London is down just 3 points. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are down, with the Dow future down 29 points at the moment, or a 10%. The British general election is Thursday, and its outcome will affect the UK's speed in leaving the European Union. Prime Minister Theresa May had hoped a surprise early election would shore up her Conservative Party ahead of the nitty-gritty Brexit negotiations, but polls suggest her timing may have been a mistake. Meanwhile, the London-based Economist magazine has decided not to endorse May or the other guy, and the magazine's thinking is a teachable moment about key issues we're facing on both sides of the Atlantic. The editor-in-chief of The Economist, Zanny Minton-Beddoes, came by Marketplace's New York Bureau to explain her thinking.
Basically, we looked at both of the main candidates in this election and decided that neither of them were really in favor of the pro-market, open borders, internationalism that has stood Britain in such good stead for the last few decades. The worst of the two, quite clearly, is Jeremy Corbyn, the leader of the Labour Party. He wants to take Britain back to nationalizing key industries, huge tax increases at the top. But frankly, the Conservatives under Theresa May have also moved very clearly away from those liberal values, if you will, liberal in the English context that we espouse. She's in favor of a hard Brexit. She wants to leave the single market. She wants to leave the currency union. And perhaps most damagingly, she wants to slash immigration back to the tens of thousands. It's now currently above 300,000, which would absolutely devastate the British economy if that happened very fast.
Let me stop you there. I mean, because this will have a special resonance given the U.S. political context. Theresa May wants to significantly curtail workers moving into the country. You think that hurts the economy?
You're absolutely right that this is, in some sense, a fault line, both here in this country and in Britain, the attitude to immigration. And there is a sense that we need to gain control over the numbers, managed immigration. I'm not against that in principle, but what I think is very dangerous is Theresa May's adamant desire to radically cut the pace of immigration in the UK. Because if you look at the British economy, it's extremely dependent on immigrant labour, whether it's in the hospitality industry, whether it's in the National Health Service, where, frankly, European nurses, European doctors are essentially making that system continue. So it's putting the ideology of dragging down immigration ahead of the British economy. And for us, we believe in an open economy, a liberal society. It's an extremely dangerous shift.
All right. So that leaves you with the Liberal Democrats. Is anybody other than your editorial board at The Economist going to vote for these people? They're not polling all
No, they're not. But if you read to the end of our editorial, you would have read that we hope that they will be part of the nucleus of a radical centrist movement, as has happened in France. So our endorsement of the Lib Dems was done in the full knowledge that they are going nowhere this year. They frankly have a terrible leader. They, as a party, are an amalgam of some soft left types and some real liberals. But for us, they are perhaps going to be the nucleus of a radical centrist movement.
Again, liberals in the British sense, not the American
liberals
sense.
It's very important to say that. What I mean when I say liberal is liberal in the 19th century British sense, pro-market, pro-individual freedom, pro-openness, not the American sense.
Zanny Minton-Beddoes, editor of The Economist. Always good to talk to you.
Great to be here.
Hi, David Brancaccio, stepping out of my anchorman role for a second. Marketplace is here because these days I think it's essential to have an independent source exploring how the economy really works, not just for the market participants or the financial geniuses, but for everyone. Your support keeps our kind of reporting coming, and it is especially vital now at the end of our fiscal year. If you could, visit marketplace.org/donate to contribute and to keep us on the beat. Thank you. Schools are now planning their summer shutdowns, right? But in Puerto Rico, many of those schools, nearly 180 of them, will not reopen in the fall. The dramatic list of school closures is part of the economic and debt crisis there. From the Marketplace Education Desk at WYPR in Baltimore, Amy Scott reports.
Enrollment in Puerto Rico's public schools has dropped 30% since 2010 as more families have left the island for better job prospects. 150 schools have already closed since then. Arturo Porzakansky is professor of international economic relations at American University. He says Puerto Rico just has to tighten the belt.
So now they have to do a lot of the pruning that should have been done over many years. But that's the reality when you run out of money, especially other people's money, you have to tighten the belt.
The additional closures could prompt more families to leave. Jacob Kierkegaard is a senior fellow with the Peterson Institute for International Economics.
And this, of course, will work as a brain drain, which certainly will make servicing the debt that the Commonwealth already has even more problematic in the long run.
The consolidation is expected to save about $7 million for a government that filed for bankruptcy earlier this year on $70 billion in debt. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Our producers are Justin Ho, Katie Long, and Daniel Shin. Our engineer this week is Bill Lance. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.